Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello and welcome to this week's episode of the Curzon Podcast, our first of 2018. This week we'll be discussing Martin McDonagh's Golden Globe winning drama, Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri. And as well as that, we'll also be speaking to one of the film's stars, Clark Peters. I'm Sam Howlett, and while there are three billboards outside Ebbing, Missouri, there are three podcasters inside Soho, London. As this week I'm joined by Ryan Hewitt.
Hello.
And making her second podcast appearance,
yeah.
Kelly Powell.
Hello.
Hello, Kelly.
Hi.
Happy New Year, guys.
Yep. Happy New Year to you, Sam.
And what have you been watching? What films have you been watching? Good to pick a highlight from the past week or so.
A highlight from the past week. God, I've forgotten what I've watched. Oh, actually, I watched In Bruges the other day.
Okay.
For the first time. Yeah. In prep for this.
Yeah.
And also because I know I should have seen the film many years ago. But that's definitely a highlight. It was excellent. Excellent.
Cool. Yeah. Ryan, how about yourself? What have you been filling your time with?
So, I finally got round to watching Call Me By Your Name on Friday. I was completely late to the game. I cannot explain why this happened. But I made it. I watched it. I thought, as everyone has, it is an absolutely marvellous film. And there is a particular moment, I won't spoil it, I'm sure everybody has seen this, but there's just this moment in the train station. Does that ring
a bell? Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
My heart, man.
Oh, I can't get it out of my head. That was a moment where I thought, I've been this guy. I've been
really?
This person.
Really?
Wow.
Not literally at a train station.
Yeah.
But I mean, you know, everything that's happening
here.
Yeah.
I thought, yes, this film is... It really is one of the best films of the last 12 months.
Yeah.
If not the best film.
Why not?
Yeah.
I think it's my favourite from last year.
Yeah.
Definitely up there.
People are still discovering it as well, like yourself. Like, every day I hear someone else saying, oh, I finally got around to seeing it and I loved it. Yeah. It's still on people's minds, even though it's been out for months now. It's got legs. And it's awards season at the moment, isn't it? It didn't perform too well at the Golden Globes of the weekend, but I mean, it's being nominated. The BAFTAs came out and it's got quite a few nominations.
It's good.
Yeah. So I think it's still going to push people to see it.
I hope so. It's really nice to see that it's at least getting nominations.
Yeah.
Who knows what's going to happen with actually winning, but it's just nice to see it up there in the lists.
Yeah. Mm. I've been watching Godless on Netflix, which is incredible. So if you don't know, Godless is a 7-part Western TV show. Each part is about an hour and 15 minutes, so it's almost like a film in itself, each episode. So it's got a real epic scope. If you don't like Westerns, a lot of people don't worry, this is quite a different one, I think, because it's very much about the female perspective. So it's set in a town where the majority of the men are killed in a mining explosion, and so it's about how these women take over the town and have to fend for themselves by the surrounding danger of other men. So it's got real interesting themes. Jeff Daniels is the bad guy, which I don't think I've seen before, because Jeff Daniels is always the nice guy. So he's the head of this gang. Jack O'Connell is in it. Michelle Dockery.
Love him.
Yeah, really good cast.
It's a great cast, yeah.
Yeah, that's really good. I think Steven Soderbergh is a producer.
Oh,
so
nice.
It's got that kind of, you know, prestige touch to it.
Mm.
So let's get on with the show. Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri is the story of Mildred Hayes, played by Frances McDormand, who challenges the local authorities to solve her daughter's murder by renting out the titular Three Billboards in Ebbing, Missouri, publicly calling out their failures. But before we let you know our thoughts on Three Billboards, it's time to hear from one of its stars. Ryan, do you want to introduce this one?
So I was lucky enough to speak to Clark Peters, who has a supporting role as Abercrombie. It would be a bit of a spoiler to let you know exactly why he appears, but he comes in and makes a big impact on the town. A terrific performance.
Yeah.
as brief as it is, it makes a very big impact.
Excellent. So this is Ryan talking to Clark Peters.
So today on the Curzon Film Podcast, we welcome Mr. Clark Peters, star of Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri. And today is a particularly good day to be talking about this film because just last night, Three Billboards took home 4 Golden Globe Awards.
Yes, it did. And we've got a nomination for another nomination from the SAG, Screen Actors Guild in America. Uh-huh. And from what I understand, never having been here before, that this is probably one of those steps that people take towards the Oscars.
Yes.
You know, and could I, Ryan, just correct you on that? I'm not a star in this. I have a supporting role.
Okay.
And that when you see the film, you'll see who the stars are. I'll leave it at that. And I'm quite happy to be in second place to these performances because they are superb.
That's very modest of you to say. When you signed on to the film, how many of the other cast members were already there? And did that have any persuasion in you taking the role?
Now, that's a good question. I knew that Woody was already attached. I knew that that Francis was already attached. I didn't know Sam, but I didn't take. Well, I guess there was an influence in that. Yes, I'd worked with Woody before, and it was good to see. It would be good to see him again. I'd never worked with Francis, but I knew of Francis's work. So I think if there was anyone there who I was looking forward to seeing again, it was Woody, as part of this cast. But he was not what made me want to do this. What made me want to do this was that it was a good story.
Right.
And the character that I was being offered, I felt I can resonate with him. You know, I liked the way that Martin's had placed the words in my character's mouth. And I felt that it was overall a really good comment on Middle America, a comment on race, class, sexism. And for those reasons, you know, I wanted to do this. You know, I like things that, as an actor, I like things that are going to inform, educate, uplift. I'm not really into like action. Let's kill that sucker and get it over and done with.
Right.
You know, I like things that make people think, that are going to spark a dialogue. You know, and that are more uplifting rather than things that are going to anesthetize you, to escape into that. You know, that is yet to come.
You know. Completely. You mentioned that it's very much a comment on class and sexism and race. Mm. And there's a moment near the beginning of the film where we see a character reading Flannery O'Connor's "A Good Man Is Hard to Find," and it seems to set up the kind of men that we're about to meet.
Yes.
But interestingly, Abercrombie seems to be the elusive good man, the one who is hard to find. Did you feel that way about him, that he comes in and he's a new way of thinking?
Yes and no. Yes, in the context of the piece. No, because that's how America is.
Right.
This is what I love about McDonough, is that here's an observation from a European point of view, from an English British point of view. So, and by that I mean, these are his words, these are his observations, this is his direction. This is a British film about an American subject. And what I liked was that he allowed me to contribute to the perspective of Black America in that, you know. And he was receptive to that, which I really appreciate, because without mentioning what it was, because of a shift or some line changes, those line changes have come on back of being, yes, that was spot. And even for Martin, recognized that this was the right way to present this character in this environment. You know.
So were you able to help shape I was character of Abercrombie.
Yeah, I was helped shape my character.
Yeah. How was he pitched to you when you first read? Were you told what kind of role he was playing and who he was representing?
I was told what kind of role he was, and actually when you read it, it's pretty much easy to see who he is. And if you're of a certain age, your mind will be cast back to Sidney Poitier and Rod Steiger coming into Heat of the Night. And that's what he wanted.
Yeah.
You know? But there were moments where that it just would have been off for my character to use the language that he was looking for, because it would have lost the integrity of that character.
Right.
And also, I dare say that men of color who are in that situation are someone's got to cover their backs.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying? Someone's got to have your back in the white community.
Right.
You know, that's just the way it is. You know, ain't no low rangers out here any longer.
Yeah. You know? I heard you describe your character as the townspeople of Ebbing's worst nightmare. As you used to sort of follow on from what you're saying.
Mm. Well, I'm not too sure it's the townspeople. As much as that police station, he is their worst nightmare. Again, which is why, you know, things had to be sort of adjusted to accommodate that.
Right.
You know, yes, I would imagine as well for some of the townspeople, he was their worst nightmare. But that's Middle America, you know. He could have been anything other. And he could have been Chinese. He could have been Puerto Rican. He could have been Native American Indian. It's their land. You know, he could have been anything. But because he wasn't white, he's their worst enemy. He's their worst nightmare.
Right.
You know, that's what that's about. You know, he could have been a woman.
Yeah.
If it was a female, that would have been a really interesting dynamic had that police chief been a female.
That's a very interesting point. I mean, Ebbing's a fictional place,
yes.
Correct? And so it's therefore very symbolic of Middle America, like you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
And in that, Abercrombie in particular seems to symbolize progress
mm-hmm.
and an idea of forcing people
to
think a new way.
Yes.
Carrying on with that idea, what do you think the billboards symbolize in this story?
The billboards are, I don't think it's far to go. I think that it is the cry for help, precisely how it's used. And it's not just a cry, it's a scream for help. That's why billboards and not a little advert in the newspaper.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think it's also the billboards represent the elephant in the room. You know, what you don't want to talk about is right under you. How can you ignore this? Yeah. And I think in that respect, it's part and parcel to all the issues that the North American society would prefer not to look at. Yeah. They would prefer to take the road that doesn't go past the billboards.
Yeah.
You know.
It seems to be about an idea of being an onlooker and tolerating intolerance is not acceptable.
Yes.
It makes you a participant in
that's
that.
That's exactly what I was saying earlier. You know, there's some people who wouldn't see this, and that's what I was saying basically to that guy who said this is I've heard people criticize this. I thought anyone who's criticizing this must be part of the problem.
It's an interesting.
You're part of the problem.
Perspective, yeah.
You know, speak up. If you don't dig it, speak up. The one thing that the 45th president has given America is the freedom to speak your mind.
Mm.
So now racists are speaking their mind. Hello, now you know. Now you finally know. You know, so. If you're quiet or you're silent, you're really part of the problem, because then the problem of finding our humanity becomes clouded. But if I know that you're wearing a schwa sticker on your sleeve, right, I can sit and talk with you, right? But if you're just a cat that's standing on the side watching us talk, I don't know where you are, mate.
Yeah, you need to...
You need to step up either on one side or the other, because this man and I are having a dialogue, and either he's going to convince me or I'm going to convince him. But at the end of this conversation, we will know where we stand and how to behave. But as far as you standing on the side looking in, he doesn't know, I don't know, so out of here. You know?
Yeah.
You are the problem. You know, we can't focus. We can't focus. Nobody can focus on issues when people are complacent.
So would you say that that's the message that you hope people would take away from this film, that it's speak up?
Yes, absolutely. Speak up on all the issues that you find, because I think that this is a story about humanity. Mm-hmm. I think this is a story about desperate people who are not happy in their desperation, and through this story, find something called humanity inside them. How it manifests itself is different, but there is. Have you seen the film?
I've seen it twice.
Okay, yeah. So I'm sitting at Sam's character.
Yes.
As weird as the ending is, he's found some humanity.
Yes, there's a kind of working towards a sort of redemption.
Yes, and, you can feel that, you know. He's not that, you know, Woody's character expresses it immediately, you know, and I think that Martin was very clever in casting him like that, because we never think of Woody as being a soft, loving-hearted man.
Yeah,
you don't think of him, no. You know, because the industry has always put him a little bit on the other side.
Yeah, he's always been an edgy.
He's always edgy, yeah. But here he is, being extremely vulnerable, and for those theatergoers who know that face, to see that are moved by his humanity. Very clever, very clever.
I agree, and I think there's something I want to ask you about as well with this idea of speaking up. And it seems to me that a lot of the characters, mm-hmm. particularly Woody Harrelson's character, Frances McDormand's character, and your character, mm-hmm. have to be tough outwardly. But we see each of them display compassion at other moments.
Yes, yes.
So I guess that feels like the message of the film is to be bold and to be loud and don't be afraid to upset people and be offensive.
Yes, yes. I think it's about listening. Mm. I think it's about listening.
And ways to make people listen.
Yes. You know, we all have some cross to bear, but if there's nobody observing you or knows what your cross is, that's why you're carrying it, because you want someone to see. You know, you want someone to hear you. And if they're not hearing you, then things just continue as they are. Hence the previous conversation we were having here. Mm. So I think that, I think this is about listening more than being brash and loud about the issues, right? But at the same time, it's like, don't shy away from it. Don't shy away from the issues. You know, get it out there. Be succinct.
Yeah.
Say it. Hit it and quit it, as James Brown used to say. Hit it and quit it.
It seems as well like there's a suggestion about collaboration. We've talked about the way that the film deals with race, mm-hmm. but it also deals with sexism. The story revolves around a case of sexual violence.
Yes, it deals much more with sexism than it ever does about race at all.
And really, it's a woman's story. It's about Mildred's story to get justice.
Yes.
But she needs to work with other people who are facing injustice in order mm-hmm. to get that.
Yes. Well, what you find is that the underclass doesn't care whether you're black, white, male, or female, as long as you're not rich and educated.
You know, yeah.
That's the underclass. You know, and what this, I guess if you, you know, you could probably stretch to that if the voice of the underclasses are heard, then there might be some change. Yet, what we are not broadcasting is that you should hop into a van and go to Ohio and take care of the mess.
Vigilante justice, you know, may not, you know, be the way
it's
you
not, it ain't about that. You know. No, it's not about that.
Okay. The last thing I want to ask you, if you have a billboard, what would you put on your billboard? What do you think is the thing that we need to shout about right now?
There aren't enough billboards, brother.
There aren't enough billboards.
You know, I've got issues. You know, I've got issues that go from medicine and science to food and ecology to parenting to race to sexism to ageism. You know, there's just too many issues that I see that I would love to shout about, but where does one begin? You know, I guess I know what I would say. I would say, sit in silence and listen to your heart. Sit in silence, the deepest silence and stillness that you could find, and listen to your heart. That's what I mean. Yeah. Sit in silence, listen to your heart. Yeah.
I think that's brilliant.
Yeah, that would be it. The middle one would be just big letters, silence. Yeah.
Clark Peters, thank you very much for your
time.
Thank
you, Ryan. Thank you very much, mate.
Indeed. Okay, so that was Clark Peters there. Did you talk about his role in Notting Hill at all?
I resisted the urge to sit there and say I really liked the bits in Missouri. But I didn't go there, no, I didn't. But I watched Notting Hill over Christmas.
So did I, for the first time.
What?
Yeah.
Samuel?
I know, only for the first time. And the scene where Hugh Grant, so if you haven't seen it, Hugh Grant has to fake being a journalist to get to Julia Roberts and is accidentally... What was the magazine he's part of?
It's Hound and Home or something.
And he has to interview this actor, played by Clark Peters, and he knows nothing about the film. He's just blagging it as he goes along.
So
which
good.
Is kind of what we do every week. But Three Billboards then. Martin McDonagh's third feature film. And me and Kelly were speaking before this that we think this might be his most mature film. That's not making it sound boring, but...
No, robust.
Maybe, yeah.
Emotionally robust.
Yeah, I think so. Certainly the most accomplished. It's a bigger cast. It's more layers.
Yeah.
More movement.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it owes more on the side of tragedy than I think it does comedy.
Mm. Well, so at the Golden Globes, it won Best Motion Picture Drama. And the Golden Globes have this weird thing of dividing comedy and drama. And I think doing that to a film like Three Billboards is quite a hard task. Because
Definitely.
The film does flip back and forth, I think, between comedy and drama. That's not just scene by scene, that's within a scene. It will, each line could be, one could be comedic, one could be really heartbreaking.
Yeah.
So I think that's quite a, he walks quite a tightrope.
Does. At times it's kind of jarring when the tone changes so.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Abruptly, but I think that he manages it every single time. And every time I was kind of, I'd be like, what? Oh, this is a joke after that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I went along with it every time. Yeah. It jolted you and it made you sit up in your seat, but it wasn't ruining a tone. It wasn't like ham-fisted or anything like that.
Yeah. It was more to make you think, I think, about. And also the way that we all kind of process grief and strife, I think, Yeah. It's a human thing, you know? Yeah. You can't, it's not all tragedy. It's not, people are,
yeah.
you know, humour is a way of dealing with things as
Absolutely.
Well.
Absolutely. And in a very different way, last year's Manchester by the Sea, I think had a similar thing where it's a film about grief, but it's finding the humour in that, like that sort of awkward humour, that kind of dark humour.
Yeah.
I mean, in a very different way, of course, but there's still that thing of humour in tragedy.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, Manchester by the Sea is an interesting one. I think it was always talked about as being a hard, heavy watch, but I found it really funny.
Yeah,
it was. Yeah, it definitely had moments where.
Yeah,
which in the right places, exactly, which made it even more, you know, engaging. I think.
Yeah, this is quite a mixture of a melodrama, as you've mentioned, sort of melancholy, but then also a lot of quirkiness as well. And in that sense, it almost has a kind of Coen Brothers vibe, doesn't it? It's almost Coen-y.
I think he reaches for that, definitely. I think he's definitely influenced heavily by the Coen Brothers. I think what he does well, and we were speaking about this a little bit earlier, is that, you know, these people sort of, specifically Sam Rockwell's character, what's his name?
Dixon. Yeah.
You know, and even McDormand's character, Mildred, and Woody Harrelson's the Chief Willoughby, they all kind of begin as caricatures, you know, in your mind. And that's where the first 10 minutes of that film was hilarious. You know, it's so funny.
Yeah.
And they begin sort of as these caricatures that you're sort of introduced to this town and you're sort of going, oh, well, you know, what's going on? What happened? And then as the film progresses, so their kind of complexities as humans come out and we delve more into that, which makes the story interesting.
So I think one of the main talking points of the film is Frances McDormand.
Yeah.
So she won Best Actress at the Golden Globes. We think she's probably the favourite at the Oscars at this stage.
Yeah, I reckon, yeah.
So he wrote it with her in mind, and it's one of those performances. It sounds a bit cliche now, but I really can't imagine anyone else playing
100%.
That role.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, sometimes I imagine it as what happened to
Marge Gunderson.
Marge Gunderson. grown up.
Yeah.
And, actually, yeah.
Because she always has that
hardened
edge.
On the other side of the law.
And that, yeah. That complete independence of spirit. And, yeah, she seems like a progression of that in a way.
Which kind of.
Again, references back to this Coen feeling that it has.
Yes, definitely. I think she does an incredible job of playing a mother, you know, going through this terrible, terrible grief, but not, you know, over-sentimentalizing it.
Yeah.
Or, you know, it's not the sort of cliched, you know, themes that a lot of these, you know, characters might have going through something like this. I think she takes a very, very different stance. Her, you know, she has a stoicism about her.
Mm-hmm. A lot of people, myself included, kind of thought, oh, McDormand's main role in her lifetime will be Fargo. That's one she'll be remembered by. But I mean, not anymore. Like at this, perhaps the later stage of her career now, she's done something equally, perhaps even more iconic.
Yeah.
And created a character that I think will be remembered many years to come.
Oh, definitely.
And she's even, she has like the costume, the sort of the blue overalls and the bandana.
Yeah.
I mean, that's kind of, in itself, has become an iconic image of the film.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I mean, we were saying earlier that the influence, I don't know if you knew this, but I listened to a podcast with him, with McDonough.
There are other podcasts?
This has been spoken about, this film. You know, and they were talking about the influence for, you know, her, where her, she kind of got elements of her character. And a big influencer, actually, interestingly, was in the early stages, John Wayne.
Oh, right.
With this sort of Western, you know, this typical lone gunman stoicism that a male character in a Western or spaghetti Western would have. And the bandana comes from, is an homage to a Walken's character in The Deer Hunter. It's quite interesting that she's pulling from these, like, iconic male characters.
Like hyper-masculine
yeah. sort of, and in a man's world, you know, what McDonough calls it, her war uniform, you know, that she wears. She dons this uniform so that she doesn't have to think about what she's wearing or how she looks. Yeah. It's like she's going to war when she wears this. Yeah, which I thought was very interesting.
Yeah, she's going out and making a really fairly peaceful protest to begin with anyway.
Yeah.
She's got these billboards that like speaking truth to power, and they're like some placard that you're at a march with, but they happen to be planted in the ground and 20 foot high.
Exactly. Yeah.
but she's sticking it to the man.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Which takes huge bravery as well, yeah. You know?
Like, she sticks it to a lot of men.
Yeah, exactly.
Sometimes quite literally in the scene.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. The dentist.
Yeah. But there's also this thing with her that she is just a kind of a rage monster in the film. She's just complete, you know, she's a woman on a mission and there's nothing going to stop, there's nothing in her way.
Mm.
And she has a son. She has a child still alive. But I mean... Yeah. It almost feels like her relationship with him comes at a cost of her, this mission that she set herself.
Yeah, he's fairly frustrated at everything she's doing as a teenager would be embarrassed to be a parent.
But it's interesting, the film doesn't judge her for that.
No.
You know, I think that in a cliched, stereotypical way, you know, what is a mother? What is her role? What is a mother going through grief?
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I think she kind of, she's on her own, firstly. You know, she's a single mother.
Yeah.
Her kid is old enough, I guess, to like sort of deal with his own. And she's like, I've got a mission and I'm going to do this and nothing's going to stop me, even though her role as a mother is at the center of her escapade.
Yeah, it has a real sense of it being a woman's mission, specifically against all of the useless men that are in this town.
Yeah.
We mentioned this in the interview with Clark Peters that we've just been heard, but the film, in the early scenes, you see a character reading Flannery O'Connor's A Good Man Is Hard to Find, which seems to set up this idea of there are not a lot of good men in this town.
Yeah.
You've got a chief of police who's tolerating a racist deputy.
Yeah.
You've got that racist deputy. You've got a chief of police who's also not seeking justice sufficiently for a crime against a young woman. You've got an ex-husband to Mildred who is an abusive husband.
Yeah.
And it's just, you know, it's just one woman against everything else, against the patriarchy.
Yeah, basically. For sure.
Yeah.
I read an interesting line in the New York Times review of the film, and I think it said something like, McDonough's films are a spectacle of men behaving terribly, generally.
Yeah.
And she kind of is the sole... She's the through line that carries the film on its journey. Even though she as a character doesn't change that much, interestingly, this film sort of doesn't follow the typical structures of a screenplay, you know, because something pertinent happens round about the middle of the movie that we're not going to spoil, but that kind of throws everything.
Yeah.
You think it's going one way and then it's like, oh, no, actually it's not. And, The film structure sort of meanders a little bit, sort of goes, but she's the one thing that pulls it together.
Yeah.
And the other characters are sort of, well, Sam Rockwell's character is the one that I think changes the most. We were speaking about this earlier throughout the film, but in this world of men behaving terribly and having, kind of being caricatures of certain stereotypes or whatever it might be, even though they are humanized, she's the one solid thing that runs through the film that you're following.
Yeah.
You know, that grounds you as an audience, I think, as well.
And you're with her.
Yeah, totally.
Almost the entire time.
Yeah.
Even she does some questionable things in pursuit of the right thing. But she's not as flawed as the other characters, I don't think.
No.
But there's some... She has a couple of really, real, like, acidly delivered lines. But... Yeah, I mean, in general, I mean, this is a film we need right now, right? With a strong female protagonist uncovering the truth about a sexual assault and calling out idle onlookers.
Yeah.
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 Yeah, exactly. Well, calling out, I think, is a big thing. Is that, you know, it's enough of this sort of blind ignorance that people kind of turn.
Sure. Yeah.
Turn it, you know, they don't want to engage with, they don't want to, because it's easier. And it's so many years in the making that it's just happened and happened and happened. And it's eventually someone is so enraged that, you know, it's enough. Enough is enough.
Yeah.
Really.
So let's talk about the rest of the town then, rest of Ebbing. Yeah, we've mentioned the police quite a lot and they are an integral part to the film.
Yeah.
So you have Woody Harrelson as Chief Willoughby and then Sam Rockwell as Lieutenant Dixon. We'll start with Woody Harrelson because I guess that's the easier character to discuss. He's quite... a sympathetic character, really, and even though he's, as you mentioned, he's done a wrong in a way, in the way that he's, you know, overlooked certain things and put his trust in officers who perhaps shouldn't have that much power, but he is seen as an overall a nice guy.
Yeah, he's someone who makes it very clear, or his defense is that he's trying to do his best.
Yeah, but is he?
Is his best good enough?
Yeah. I mean, I think we had an interesting discussion beforehand. I mean, we're just bringing up all these points, but Yeah, I mean, I guess it goes to Officer Dixon's character as well, you know, mm-hmm. like they start off one way, you think they're one way, you know, Harrison's yeah. character's the good guy, Rockwell's character's the bad guy, and sort of as the film progresses, you find out, like, he probes their characters, you know, is the good guy really the good guy? Is he doing enough? You know, should we be letting him off the hook? Because yeah. you do follow him, you do sympathize with him, you know, he's the yeah. one character that you kind of... And his voice interestingly carries yeah. you through the whole film. It's her story, but his voice carries you. Maybe he did that on purpose because, you know, you do have an affiliation with it. You recognize him. He's the most relatable character. And so maybe you needed that in juxtaposition to her sort of hardness because, you know, and they spoke about this, that they didn't want to make her a lovable character. She isn't a lovable character.
Yeah.
She doesn't want to be related to, she just wants justice. She doesn't care how she looks yeah. or what happens to her in the process of her, you know, this pursuit of justice. And so I think his voice lends that sort of, it gives you the window to yeah. access her story. But, you know, again, it's questionable. Is he a good guy? Did he do enough? You know, are the choices that he makes in the film the right ones? You know, yeah. that kind of thing. And yeah. similarly, Rockwell's character, you know, I mean, it's a difficult one to talk about because it's slightly problematic. But, you know, he does start off one way, the racist, you know, police officer, and he becomes more and more humanized as the film progresses. There's definitely elements of his character that changes that yeah. you can sort of...
Definitely. I think you made a good point a moment ago when you said no one's really good or bad.
Yeah.
And if we do force, is this person good, is this yeah. person bad, onto each character, Sam Rockwell's Dixon, definitely a very uncomfortable character. If yeah. we're trying to say, is he good now? But we've been told throughout the yeah. film that no one's all good or all bad.
Yes.
So he's still not good or bad.
Yeah, exactly.
Despite
yeah. I think I don't know about redeemable.
Yeah.
But there are redeeming qualities yeah. that he possesses.
Well, I think yeah. this is the reaction McDonough wants from Dixon, right? He wants yeah. people to feel uncomfortable liking him.
Mm. Yeah.
He is, you know, for all intents and purposes, a sympathetic racist, which is a weird phrase to say out loud.
Yeah.
But that's the character he's created, and he wants you to sit in your seat at the cinema thinking, oh, I like this guy. And they think, oh, no, I shouldn't. But
yeah.
That's what makes this film so interesting and so great to talk about and
yeah.
so different from anything else we'll see, because it's not probing, you know, often films will probe you and say, you don't like this person, you like that person, you want this person to
yeah,
win,
and
this person to be punished.
You. Yeah, exactly.
This film wants you to leave the cinema and think, I have no idea how to feel about that character.
Yeah.
yeah.
But that's how you, in real life.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean,
exactly.
Spending a certain amount of time with people, it changes day-to-day basis what you think of them. And
mm-hmm.
So I think this film is... delicately tries to do that, but and Sam Rockwell is pretty phenomenal in this film as well. Very few actors I think could pull off that character
yeah.
and make him sympathetic in the way that he is.
Yeah, you made a good point earlier where you like, he's definitely a Coen Brothers, like they definitely should cast him in some
yeah.
at some point, because he's phenomenal. He really is phenomenal
yeah.
and underrated, like totally underrated.
Yeah, he
flown
is
flown
yeah.
under the radar.
Yeah, he's definitely a Coen Brothers
yeah.
dummy.
Yeah.
A dummy in power.
Exactly. Yeah.
So then I really liked this thing about the rest of the town, how they react to the murder, because often, so I'm thinking of things like Twin Peaks and The Killing in Broadchurch, where you have a child is murdered in a small town, and that sort of effect ripples throughout the town, and everyone's lives are changed because of that. This seems to be like the anti-version of that, where... the rest of the town has moved on because it's seven months
yeah.
later, so
well,
the rest of the town
back on it, yeah.
has moved on and they've recovered, but Mildred hasn't yet. And I think there's this kind of anger in her that other people could move on from this horrific event, so
yeah.
why can't I, or why do they get to move on and I'm not allowed to? So the billboards are a reminder that we shouldn't be the same again after what's happened, that kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah. It's like a comment on the press cycle, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah, exactly.
And we've already sort of not directly mentioned it, but the whole Me Too campaign is an idea of keeping... We don't want to let what happened in October...
Yeah.
Just be what happened.
...pushed out
yeah.
fizzled
the
out.
News cycle.
Yeah.
And forgotten about.
Yeah.
And she's going... You know, she even says, I think, you've got to keep it on
yeah.
people's minds or something.
Yes,
like
yes.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, it's her actions that sets...
Yeah.
Like, it shouldn't be, but it's her bringing it back that
yeah.
sets the ripples that disrupts the town that the murder should have in the first place.
Yeah.
Done. Yeah.
Okay, and the music as well in the film. So that's done by Carter Burwell, who mentioned the Coens again, but he is their chief composer.
Burwell's take on the music, you know, when McDonough first heard it, it was very spaghetti western type of, you know, Mildred's theme is very much in that western sort of area, which is interesting because of how, you know, Frances McDormand was composing her character even before, you know, any of this stuff. So it kind of was in serendipitously in line with what she was going, you know, the John Wayne, the lone gunman, the, you know, woman on a mission.
Right.
And I think the music, Martin McDonagh said, you know, he doesn't like to do things that's expected. He loves to go against the grain. And I think the music here, with Burwell's composition is definitely, you know, in a sad moment, he doesn't play the sad tune, you know. It's got elements that makes you, it's the juxtaposition that makes you think, you know.
Yeah.
And so I think that is a running theme. And Mildred's theme, which has been described as her war theme, you know, it's like there's moments where it's really strong, you know, and moments that it's quite soft. And I think it has that ability to ebb and flow.
Ebbing and flowing. It's interesting that you've watched In Bruges.
Recently.
Yeah, because I think there's a kind of, across all three of McDonagh's films, there's this idea of violence being everywhere.
Yeah.
Particularly in here, you know, it's like the consequences of violence and then the pursuit of violence to encounter that violence. There's a kind of... counteract.
Vicious,
there's a cycle of violence that seems never ending.
Yeah.
And it's even in, you know, there's Dixon's reputation, there's the murder of her daughter, there's even stuff like Willoughby, he says a line about wanting to punch Dixon's mum's teeth in. It's just very casually mentioned. I just thought this town is obsessed with violence. And violence is everywhere in this town. And Frances McDormand's character is an incredibly violent person.
Yes.
She kicks two teenagers in the groin. Mildred's own mission for justice eventually becomes a pursuit of violence and vengeance.
Yeah.
So, and the similar way that in Bruges and Seven Psychopaths are about these sort of violent turns people take in their life.
Yeah, it's interesting that both in Bruges and Three Billboards, the inciting incident is the death of a child. Mm. You know, the death of innocence. And I think, you know, whether it's definitely conscious, but also subconsciously, you know, maybe McDonagh's playing with these, you know, the death of innocence and the rise of violence, you know, and what does it say about society and people and how we connect with each other, which is very, it's interesting that Mildred's character as a woman inhabits that realm, you know, she lives within that. That's the only way that her character can exist.
Yeah.
And that is in itself an interesting juxtaposition, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Although all the violence happens, and you know, and it's there's still an inherent humanity in everyone that exists. That is the redeeming thing about his films, is that is there, and that's.
Yeah, you mentioned the war theme and how it takes different turns, and it can be quite brash and aggressive, and at other times it can be really, well, softer.
Yes.
And Mildred is exactly like that.
Yeah.
There's times when she has to be extremely tough.
Exactly.
And uncompromising. And then there are little moments when you just see the compassion underneath that is always there, but it's a performance of toughness.
Exactly.
It's the only way that she can engage
with these men, you know? That's the only language that they know how to speak, I think.
Yeah.
I'm passing judgment on her, so I don't know, but I'm just musing about maybe how she's thought about, you know. And also, you know, her past with her abusive husband, you know, it's like, it's her pursuit of justice is not only for her daughter, I think it's also for the way in which women are treated in general, in Ebbing, the small town, in society and at large, you know, and it's a lashing out against that.
Well, the decision to set it in a fictional town, Ebbing not being real, it makes it very difficult not to read. Well, how can you not read this film as, like, metaphorical? Speaking to a bigger idea about what Martin McDonagh thinks is going on in America.
Yeah, exactly.
And it is very American. I don't think it's necessarily a comment on what's going on in the West.
No, it's
specifically
it's American,
America, isn't it?
It's
Which is interesting from a Irish English.
Yeah. And also interesting that he wrote this script like 6 or 8 years ago.
8 years ago.
Yeah, yeah. It's been in the making for ages. I think it's the right time. As we said, you know, it's serendipitous. You know that this movie is coming out at this time. It has a comment to say on, you know, America as politically, socially, also Hollywood as a microcosm of what's happening at, you know, society at large. I mean, it's definitely a fortuitous timing that this film is coming out.
Well, what did you think of Three Billboards Outside of Missouri? Whether you agree or disagree, you can tweet us at Curzon Cinemas with the hashtag Curzon Podcast, or email us podcast@curzon.com, and we'll read out your mini review on next week's show. But if you feel like staying at home this weekend, there's plenty to see on Curzon Home Cinema. The new film of the week is Jupiter's Moon, which is now available to watch. And as of Monday, the 15th of January, you can watch tennis biopic Borg vs. McEnroe, which will be available to watch on Home Cinema. And if you search for our back catalogue, you can find out what we made of Borg vs. McEnroe, as well as hear our interview with the great Stellan Skarsgård. If you've enjoyed the show, we're available on iTunes and SoundCloud, where you can rate and review us, which we would appreciate a lot. So until next week, it's goodbye from Ryan.
Goodbye.
Goodbye from Kelly.
Goodbye.
And farewell from me. Thank you for listening.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.